Welcome to the Inclusive Education Project. I'm Vicki Brett.
I'm Amanda Salohi. We're two civil rights lawyers on a mission to change the conversation about education, civil rights, and modern activism.
Each week, we're going to explore new topics which are going to educate and empower others
and give them a platform to enact change in education and level the playing field.
Welcome back, friends.
Hello, listeners. We're going to get right into it because this is a part two with Dan Jordan. And we already had so much to discuss within the last time that we wanted to have him back as quickly as possible because we were able to really get through some of the basics. And we got some really great feedback from some of the listeners. Thank you so much about, you know, giving over some of the responsibilities that can start as early as elementary school, depending on your child. But we really want to start seeing potentially in middle school and definitely in high school. And that is being part of the IEP team, knowing what their unique needs are and what types of accommodations. Right. Because as Dan had pointed out, it's all on them, baby, when they get to college.
Right. And so today we're going to talk a little bit more about those actual steps that students will need to take, you know, prior to their first day in college and then shortly thereafter. And we want to keep in mind as we go through these steps that these are skills that we are expecting college freshmen to be able to do on their own independently. So as we think about these, thinking and talking about what can we do in the earlier years to help support that skill development.
And so, Dan, I think we're going to throw it to you. So basically where we left off more or less was, okay, we're in high school. These are the stepping stones. And now we kind of want to talk about, all right, in college. I think we did get a little bit into, you know, they go into the office themselves, right? They are going to be responsible for all that paperwork and to be able to fill that out. And so once they kind of get through that, what do you feel is still important for them to understand, you know, once they are going to get the accommodations? Is it just a given that the professors are going to know? How does that work?
Gotcha. Well, they have to decide if they're going to get accommodations or not. And if they're not, they have to have a really good explanation as to why they're not pursuing that. And the advice that I always give is get them anyway, because you do not need to use them if you don't want to. But it saves you a lot of time and a lot of effort, especially if you do this up front. Like if you're getting an acceptance letter now, it's the springtime. So if you're getting letters now or even into the summer, just go through the process of getting the accommodations, go through that entire process because you're under no obligation to use them. Now, I know that might make some parents cringe and that might be very frightening, but it's kind of a stopgap because if they get into college and they think, well, everything's going to be fine. I'm going to have, you know, I don't want to have this burden. I just want to be like everybody else, whatever their issue is, that they have it for them and they've already gone through the process and they don't have to do that like come September and October when they probably would decide to use them anyway.
Yeah.
And September and October is really difficult time. There's a lot of stuff going on academically, and there's a lot of stuff going on in the accessibility office in and of itself for all the students that are coming. And so there might be significant amount of delays in getting the accommodations. And now it's like later October, maybe November by the time you get them, and most of the semester is gone. So I always advise make that decision anyway, just get them. And now you have responsibilities. So here's the responsibility part. So,
I just wanted to note real quick, the other thing about like just getting the accommodations, I think a lot of times when students are transitioning, you know, they've been in a program for a while. They might've been at that high school in that program for 4 years. So they've been settled in and everything's been working and easy. And so they think, oh, maybe we don't need this because we've started to taper off. We've become independent. But college is a whole new world. We're dealing with all new teachers,
that's
a new
campus,
new coursework, more of a variety of coursework. And so just because something is working in one setting, maybe without it, maybe we've tapered off, doesn't mean that the same is going to apply for the new setting. So I think it's always good in a transition to keep some familiarity so that a student has a little bit of that certainty.
That's correct. You've never been to college. So for somebody who's in high school, you've never been there, done that. Second semester, okay, that might be something a little bit different. First semester, sophomore year, that might be definitely a little bit different because you know the lay of the land. there's a lot going on with the first semester. And assuming, it's a common mistake, assuming that everything's going to be somewhat similar because education is education is education, and it's not. I used to hear it all the time. In fact, I still hear it from time to time when freshman students will come into the center, but they'll tell me I wasn't prepared for how rigorous the academics actually are. And I wasn't prepared to just have like an assignment be one and done and I get a grade and that's it. And I can't go back and fix stuff. Tests are one and done and I can't go back and fix stuff. I'm not getting extra credit, like those types of things. And having something, you're right, Amanda, having something that is very familiar to you, even if it is just as a backup, is really important because the structure is entirely different. You may have a class at 9 o'clock and then nothing until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? And that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, right? I remember back in my undergrad, I used to get my schedule and I used to make sure my schedule included Fridays were free. I didn't have any classes on Friday.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of time and a lot of stuff that is very different. You're going through K through 12 and it's very structured and there's a lot of unstructured time. So knowing what to do with that is one thing, but that's even a transition. Like, what do I do with my unstructured time? That can cause some anxiety of, I think everything's okay, but it's really not when you consider the amount of work that you need to be doing in order just to get through regular classes. Yeah. There's an awful lot of in-class time, but there's a lot of time outside. It's really like a full-time student is really 40 hours a week. That's not a joke. And that's a real thing. Right. And that can throw students way off. So I like having the accommodations piece. It's something you don't have to worry about if you do it up front. And then using them is entirely something different. So you have a transition that is just like everybody else, but then you have an added responsibility of using the accommodations that you've applied for and got approved for. So that's a whole other game.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest transition differences is, we have in high school, you're going to have your case carrier IEP team who, we may have faded out some of the support of them making sure that you've got all your work in and that you're, using your time well and stuff. And maybe we've faded that out and the students become independent, but you still in high school have that structure of the teachers are closer, even the biggest campuses are still a lot smaller than any college campus for the most part. So just in the proximity, teachers can talk to each other. They're kind of under a smaller umbrella where there's a lot more connection. But then once you get to college, you can have an English class and then let's say you have a theater class, you have an art class. They're all in different parts of the colleges where these professors are not going to be necessarily talking to each other. And so that burden really is probably one of the biggest shifts, right? Not just them expecting to do all their work, but really that management of the coursework. And can you talk a little bit about what accommodations, what supports can be put in place to kind of help with management? Because I know there's counselors, but generally in general education, they don't do too much other than say, I recommend you take this class.
Gotcha. Yeah, the supports, well, this is all on the student too. So there's no case managers. There's nobody looking over your shoulder. There's no one that's going to get you up for class. There's nobody that's going to tell you where class is. There's nobody that's going to make sure that you're on point with homework and structuring your time. And
Nobody's just structure. Gonna be doing that. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, nobody's going to be doing that. Nobody's going to be implementing a structure for any of this. And so that's kind of the first hurdle is implementing something. And supports that are available for that, there's a lot of stuff that's available. And students have to be aware, one, that there are supports available and what they are. So when you're choosing a school, choose a school that has the supports that are kind of similar to what is working now or what the student anticipates needing at some point in time. And so if you're choosing a school that's like that, let's say everything's hunky-dory and you have something that's very similar to that. So some students may need to seek out academic coaching. That's a service that is available at some schools. It is an up and growing service. Mm-hmm. I think some of the smaller schools are more involved in that simply because they see students that need that type of support, whereas academic coaching on a larger campus, university, X, who's got 35,000 students, may not have the availability of academic coaching for that. So some of the smaller schools may, so that may be coming into college choice, but academic coaching can help a student set up a schedule, can help them set up their time wisely and follow up. Again, when we're talking about services or anything else, it's also not unlimited. So there might be limits and time limits, like you may be only able to see an academic coach once every other week or maybe once a month, depending. So anything that I'm talking about with services, the student is up to, it's up to them. It's their responsibility to know what services are, what they may need, and also what the limits are to those particular services. So academic coaching is one. Tutoring is another. That's a very popular one, but it's available to everybody. And so it may not be in a format that a student is used to. They're used to going to an instructor, they're used to going to a tutor, and it's a one-on-one kind of thing. That's probably not going to be the case. You're going to be in with a couple of people, and one-on-one probably will only happen if the other people don't show up. And so that's a big change. Another one is like counseling. So students who have an IEP, but maybe they also have a 504 plan for a mental health issue.
Okay.
Those services get very specific for that. Mm-hmm. And so if you're thinking of going to a school, but they have like a psychiatrist there, but they may only have therapy, you may only get six sessions every academic year. And that may not be enough for some students. So there are limits to some things. And some schools just don't have a psychiatrist at all.
They just have
some general kind of counseling kind of stuff. And then they refer out after a couple of sessions. So it really depends on the school. And it depends on how much of that service you can get. And there's typically limits. So students have a responsibility of knowing those limits. So they know them up front, so they can use them appropriately.
Yeah.
And so there are supports that are there. It's just the biggest one is knowing what's there, what are the limits, where do I get them, how do I access them, and basically, like, does it fit for what I need up front?
Exactly. We, you know, I agree. We've seen on the rise some of the smaller schools, mid-sized schools that are gearing certain services almost like in a package, and you know, obviously can be open, but you know, we've seen it, you know, this is, you know, perfect for the ADHD kiddo, and so they might go above and beyond. And even with structured living, there are some of the dorms or parts of the dorms, and so it's nice to see that, right? So that you are still able to, you know, potentially, you know, move away from home, right? And get the experience that everybody else. But I think, the biggest thing is that even with some of the mental health services that could potentially be open to everyone as well, right? It's not going to be exclusive.
Yeah, it's not going to be as individualized. It's more about getting these students access to the learning environment, access to the materials, rather than I'm going to individualize it to your specific level. And we have to remember that because we're not dealing with the IDEA anymore, we're dealing with the ADA, and we're dealing with very different set of rules, essentially.
Exactly. So these services that we're talking about are available to everybody. And so, there might be some exceptions that they could make under certain circumstances, but by and large, they're available to everybody. And there are schools, like Vicky, like you were talking about, there are schools that have specific programs for students with certain particular things, certain programs for dyslexia, ADHD, autism is also one, but those programs come at an added expense.
Yes.
Those are not available to everybody. And there is an application process and there's, you know, there's other things involved in that. And so, it's not the Wild West, but it takes some working up front. And then the student has the responsibility of independently seeking those out more sooner than later. Later's not
and
great.
Yeah, and there's already so much in the in the transition in it of itself, right? Potentially, you know, moving away from home, being in an unfamiliar city, and just for a neurotypical person, that can be a lot. And so then to add in the extra of like, hey, you got to make sure you're on top of this. Let's go this. Is why it was important, why we had spent time and why we wanted a part two to really focus in on those high school years, right? Because as we had talked about, and I think we were on it for quite some time, is, you know, they interview you And so if you don't really know what you're like, they're going to reject that pretty quickly, no matter what paperwork you have, because it doesn't even seem like you even know. Right. And
you run that risk.
Exactly.
And if the student doesn't know how to explain it, then we're kind of calling the parent who kind of knows how to explain some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But that could take some time to get in contact with the parent. That could take a little bit of time. And then you have to verify that with the student. And so there's a length of time kind of process that goes into that. That could take up to a couple of weeks to do that. And so it's up to the student to follow through on some of that. And you do run the risk of not being able to get something that you may otherwise have approved because you just didn't have a good explanation for why you need that certain thing. And so you do run that risk. It is a student's responsibility to do all of that. Let's say everything was great. You had a good interview.
Yeah.
You got the accommodations. Mm-hmm. What happens now? All right.
Yeah.
What happens now? So this gets into the other part. So other students who do not have a disability, they're not have accommodations. They're just doing their thing as a student, just like you are, mm-hmm. just like everybody mm-hmm. else. This is an added responsibility if you have the accommodations and you're going to use them. So one, what are your accommodations? That's the first thing, because you can't assume something got approved. You have to make sure that those are approved. And then ask questions in that meeting. What do I need to do for each of these accommodations? Because each one may have something different for that student to do. So like test accommodations is a popular one, but sometimes the Office of Accessibility is not the place where you're doing those test accommodations. That's a testing center somewhere else. So you may have to know where that is, what the policies are. What do I do if I need to reschedule? What if I'm sick? Like, what happens?
Who you need to talk to, and how do you coordinate everybody that you need to deal with? Make sure you have their phone numbers accessible and
correct.
That.
All these different things. And that's just for one, which is an important one, by the way, because it's a popular one. But there's a lot of stuff. And how do you navigate scheduling? When do I schedule? How do I schedule? Who do I schedule with? And how soon do I need to show up? And what happens if I show up late? And for students who have, like, let's say dyslexia, you may have text-to-speech and speech-to-text. Mm-hmm. So those may be two separate programs. How are you learning those programs that the school has that may be different than the ones that you are used to? So you have a responsibility. A school has a responsibility to teach you those particular things, but the student has a responsibility, one, to learn it, and two, they have a responsibility to get back with those individuals who are teaching them and say, hey, I need a kind of a refresher. Or if they're mm-hmm. in a testing situation, they're using them. What happens? What do I do if something goes wrong with these programs? What do I do? And so those are all these responsibilities that students have that are kind of nuanced to each individual thing. So it's not just, let's get accommodations and forget about the rest.
Right.
There's a lot to this. And so some students like dyslexia may even have books in an alternate format. Well, that's a whole separate process. And at larger universities, that may even be a whole separate place, just like the testing center. And this is maybe a completely different place in a completely different building, and you have to find that. So asking specific questions of the accessibility staff who have this information and will give it to you, and you may get a packet of information. It's up to you to realize that you need to make sure that you're being diligent about finding those places and following the protocols and following the policies that are around each one of those accommodations, because there are. And if you don't follow your part, then it makes things a little more complicated if something goes wrong, which is kind of the next responsibility, which is, what do I do if something goes wrong? Which students just don't tend to ask that question. What do I do if my accommodations are either refused by somebody, just rare, but it happens? What do I do if the testing center doesn't have my accommodation set up? What happens if, like, a note taker is another one? What happens if I don't get notes from a note taker from a particular set of classes? What do I do to rectify that situation? And how does that relate to taking a test if I don't have the information from the note taker? You see how it gets a little more complicated. So who do I go to in order to resolve those particular problems is a big one. And so knowing that up front and asking those questions way ahead of time, so when you're in an initial interview or even way ahead of time, you can look at the policies and procedures and get a sense for what that is. And I guess a big one also, like, okay, you get your accommodations. I forgot this. I don't even know how I forgot this. but you get the accommodations, and how do you even notify your instructors? That's a big question. Students sometimes are responsible for that. And it's not like high school where everybody's kind of on the same page with the IEP or 504 plan or whatever.
Right.
Instructors don't know unless you tell them. And there is a way. Mm-hmm. Every school is different. Sometimes it's a paper letter. Sometimes it's by email. Sometimes the accessibility office is emailing that electronic copy to the student, and the student has to forward that on to their instructors. Mm-hmm. All different kinds of things for different places. And the student has the obligation to ask, how are my instructors notified and what's my responsibility within that? So if you're not notifying your instructor, you could have the test accommodations and do all the rest, know exactly where to take the test and schedule it. But if you haven't notified your instructor, that test accommodation isn't going to happen. So,
yeah, you don't want to assume that they were told, because most of the time they probably weren't. It's not like in high school where everybody's communicating. Yeah.
Correct.
That's good to know.
And I love the idea of, you know, not necessarily having to have all the answers right then and there. Like, what happens if this and what happens if that? Because there are going to be scenarios where things happen that you didn't think to ask. But as long as you know who you need to go to, you try to get something resolved. You know, you try to think and go down the rabbit hole as much as you can. And I'm sure that if you ask, like, what are some common issues that you kind of see? Oh, well, you show up late, and, you know, and then maybe they can kind of help you a little bit. But it's just, yeah, it starts to become a little bit of an avalanche, right? If you don't even have a little bit of the self-awareness and the structure, these are things that you can start working on early on in high school. You know, at the beginning of the year, you know, by the time you're junior, senior, maybe, depending on the ability of the student, like, have them reach out to the teacher, right, or all the teachers to send an email. Hi, my name is so-and-so. Like, even though the IEP team is supposed to be responsible for providing the information and the accommodations, like, have your child take ownership of that and their identity, right, in that, hey, this is something that I need, I'm just letting you know, ahead of time, so that when they get to college, that's not the first time they're sending that kind of email, right? And these are, like, some of the ways that, you know, as long as they know that they need their accommodations. Because what we'll oftentimes see is that the child will refuse accommodations, for instance, going into the other classroom, because they're made to be felt, like, different, or that's how they're perceiving, right? And then I see people be like, oh, come on, if he doesn't want it. And nobody, like, takes the time to explain to the child, hey, like, this is what, you know, so that they're comfortable by the time they get the phone to say, I do need this. And like you said, just get them. And if you don't need them, great. But if you do, at least they're there. And I feel like we should really go into a lot more. And we might have you back for part three, because but we want to be mindful of your system. Is there any kind of last thoughts that you'd like to leave some of the listeners with regarding, you know, this transition? And if there's a whole lot more, then we'll just have you come back and keep sending your questions to you guys, because we really had a lot of great information and feedback from the last time Dan was on. So we'd love to hear that. But Dan, I kind of want to give you the final word. Is there anything that sticks out that you'd like to tell our listeners to know before we end?
Yeah, I'm just going to follow up on what you were saying, that if you're practicing some type of self-advocacy all the time, and that could be something simple, like, let's make a doctor's appointment. So ironically, I have to teach students how to do that. And it's not difficult. But if parents are like, hey, if you make this appointment, and I tell parents, follow I do, we do, you do. So I'll do it in front of you. We'll do it together. And you're the one kind of making that. And then you do it the next time. And so even at the pharmacy, picking up your own medicines, if you're on them, that kind of stuff. If you have to email an instructor, it shouldn't be your mom kind of doing that. It should be, hey, let's kind of create that email so you can do that. Ask questions on a college tour is another one. So the parent can ask those questions. Mm-hmm. And at the next college tour, all it is practice asking questions. So the student can do that. There's something to be followed up with. The parent can kind of fill in. And then the next time, the student's on their own, ask questions, ask where things are, ask to meet with the accessibility staff, send those emails. I do, we do, you do. So those are just some general kind of things so that students can get in the habit of being able to speak for themselves, in situations that they also may never have had an opportunity to speak up with, like a doctor's appointment. Like, we just don't think about it really. And it's an everyday occurrence. Like, where's the health center? If you get sick, what happens?
Right.
You know, right. Like those right. simple things.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be high stakes. Call up a salon to make a hair appointment, right?
Like, yes.
Like we can practice with these smaller things earlier on, and that helps. I love the I do, we do, you do, because it really puts it in a framework for the parent, because it's not you just throwing it out there. You know, it's modeling it, let's do it together, and then next time you can do it. And it's going to be hard, you know, but you will eventually, right. with enough practice, get to a point where they're at least not so uncomfortable that they're paralyzed, right?
Right.
They will have some experience with it, and, you know, things, the more you do them, the easier that they get. So, Dan, such a pleasure. I mean, seriously, I think we'll do a little talk after we end this recording, because we might need you to come back, because I feel like there's so many more questions in there than I have just ourselves, so that we can
sure.
prepare our clients. But listeners, please send us any questions, because it's going to happen. I don't even know what to talk about. It's going to happen. But we hope you guys enjoyed this as much as we did, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye.